Hey, good morning, everyone. It's Dave Weiner here. It's Thursday, November 10th. I believe this is my first after-election podcast. And man, has the world changed. But I'm happy to say that in some ways, the world really hasn't changed all that much. But some of our assumptions are definitely different. So I assumed that Hillary Clinton would be president, and I assumed that there would be a lot of continuity in the way, how computer technology would flow through the government and its relationship to, things like Twitter and Facebook. Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama and the Democrats in general have been developing lots of connections to Silicon Valley. And so that would have been really hard to break into for a guy like me, because I'm a very much like the Bernie Sanders of software, or one of them. I know, I think of Stallman as being one of them. And so I don't get invited to a lot of the meetings that people in the tech industry have. I think that started pretty much when I started blogging. Because I, know a lot about technology, and I know a lot of technology people, and I'm not sure that people know that I have a boundary. So it kind of felt, I think, that if they were talking to me, that all of their ideas would be discussed on my blog. Well, it's not true. I'm not a reporter, and so I'm not required to write about everything that I do. I'm just a software developer who writes a blog. And there's really, at this point, not all that uncommon. But so habits, I guess, got developed, and, so they developed all this, all these people were leaving Facebook and Google and, Silicon Valley companies and whatever, and to go work at for the government for the last few years. And I thought, wow, how must that feel now, considering that almost all those people are Democrats and freedom-loving people, almost idealists. And, that here they were doing not volunteer work. I mean, they were being paid for their work. But in a sense, getting a salary instead of getting stock options. There's a generous spirit to it. And so that creates a lot of sort of competition. And then there's, Facebook, which gets a lot of the flow of people's ideas, and Twitter in a different way. But I found that, and I think a lot of other people have found that, we've now explored these two mediums, Twitter and Facebook, and I think we know what they lead to. And I mean, you think about what, and we all have a consensus on this. Facebook has become it had silos inside of silos, that, if you can't stand the politics of someone else, and there's, they can't stand ours and we can't stand theirs, right? And so what do? You unfriend them, and you unfollow them, and you break all the connections you possibly can, so that you never have to see any of their stuff. And it works. So that, my feed in Facebook only really has people who either don't share their politics or have politics that are very similar to mine. And I hear that there are a lot of Trump supporters on Facebook too, but you couldn't tell by me. It's like, what Trump supporters? I don't see any. That's because I got rid of all of them. Just don't like them. And Twitter, I block them. I mean, I don't block them. I have a rule on this. I don't block them if they follow me, then I think, okay, I don't want to block them, right? But it is also, it's a function of how nasty what they said is. I mean, if it's super nasty, I don't give a shit if they follow me. I block them. And I don't want them to exist anymore. But I've done that so successfully now that basically the Trump supporters that follow me also have to put up with an awful lot of my political opinions, so they must have a high tolerance for it, and they generally tend to be polite people who just state their opinion and they don't get personal about it and they don't gloat, and so I can kind of respect that, and I don't block them, and after the election these days, I don't even mute them, because we all. Because I have a very strong feeling that we all need to, we need to start work accepting each other. I guess that's the word for it. I've actually felt this way a long time, and there I've left a trail behind me after the 2004 election. I said this, and I did a podcast, and I wrote a bunch of blog posts just before going to a blogger con, so I probably said it to a lot of people there, and so. But here we are again, and this time I prepared. I wrote a piece, and I've been thinking about this, and I got a really strong reaction to this idea. The piece was called "Planning for Post-War America," and the war I was thinking about was the campaign and the election. That here we've had this just awful back and forth, and we've ended up not talking to each other at all. Not even acknowledging. As I've just described, it's just this line. It's like a disconnect. It's like some people have a disconnection between the left hemisphere and right hemisphere of their brain. It's like that. We just don't communicate. And we're not listening to each other because we find what each other says so abhorrent. So why is it that we find it so abhorrent? Because there's just no room for compromise. I felt that way, the frustration with a lot of the Bernie supporters. Now, I support everything that they were asking for. Everything they ask for, I support. And if they were the only people in the world, or I'm sorry, in the United States, it's really, we're talking about the US government. If they were the only people in the United States and I and me and people like me, well, we would implement everything that they had. It's all good. I know that the government can spend money as long as it's done in a productive way that creates growth, that in turn generates revenue. We're all good because these people will be taxpayers. And, so we put a little bit of money out there right now, and it comes back to us later in the form of taxes. And we use those taxes to pay off the debt that it took to send them through college. So fine. And same things with health care. I mean, we would do, our people would do better work and do more and would grow more as workers if they were healthy. It's pretty simple. I mean, health and good work kind of go together. So, I mean, it's good business to invest in the health of your populace. Who wants a bunch of sick people around, or people dying too young, or they're just, it's like, no. It's a good thing, and let's do it. I mean, when you're young, you don't appreciate that healthcare is so important. But as you get older, it becomes extremely important. You realize that you have to care for yourself, and it goes in all ways. And caring for your others is a big part of caring for yourself, because there are people too that need to care for themselves. And we develop certain empathies as we grow older. Why not let people have good health? I mean, it's a good thing. And again, it's also, and if even if you don't believe it's a good thing, it's a profit-making thing. And again, they become taxpayers, and they pay in, and they get Social Security and all this stuff. It's a virtuous cycle, and it's kind of why we're so stuck. So that's the first half of it. Now, the second half of it is, well, all right, how do you create online systems that support compromise? Because here's the deal. We can't all get what we want. We can't all get everything that we want. If it, like I said, it was just me and the Bernie supporters, people like me and people like them, but it isn't just us, because there are some things that we take for granted as being good things that really they see it the other way. They look at it and they see something completely different from what we see. So here's the thing. So the point is that you don't have to agree with somebody to understand what it is that they're saying and where they're coming from and how that affects their politics. And so I had this idea. Can we create a communication environment that is fundamentally different from the way the ones we have now work? And because whenever a Trump supporter shows up in my world, what they do is they start speeching at me. They start writing in, I think sometimes they just paste in, they have a clip, they have on their clipboard their speech for the day, and they see, oh, well, here's a, you know, guy voting for Hillary, so I'll tell you what I'll do. I'll just paste in my thing. Because the comments are just way off topic. They don't seem to have anything to do with what the person wrote. And I really do think some people are just doing that. And I also think some of them aren't even people, you know. They're bots. So why do they do that? Because they think there are a lot of people listening. And the sad thing about it is there really aren't. And but it spoils the whole thing. I mean, so you have to create an environment where there's really only one other person listening. And that way, that keeps the speeching out of it. It's just because if... Now, the other thing that you have to watch out for is people trying to change each other's minds. In other words, I'm going to argue with you, and arguing I don't like. I'm going to argue with you until you come around to my point of view. That's the goal of the discussion. And, you know, people give up because they say, there's no way I'm ever going to change your mind. Well, that should never be the goal of talking between people because, as we've noticed, it doesn't work. You don't change their minds. And second of all, why the hell do you presume that it's your place to try to change somebody else's mind? You don't know them. You know, you don't know why they feel the way they feel about this, how they got there, and you haven't bothered to get to know anything about them, and all of a sudden you're telling them what they should think. And that's not fair, and that's not right. It doesn't, and it doesn't work. It just doesn't work. And it shouldn't work. It's just not a good thing to do. I don't want anybody to try to change my mind. I will change my mind, okay, when I'm ready to change my mind. And I'm absolutely firm about that. What I think there's value instead in understanding how someone else got to where they are. Just understand it. That's all. Just get to understand it, right? And then you have to, and then if you want to, now here's where we get to the good government part of it. Because that's not the last thing you have to do. You have to compromise. You have to decide how important this is to you relative to all the other things you want. Okay? And you have to decide whether this is something you can live with or not. And if it's not, then suggest, okay, well, maybe I can't live with, you know, all of what you're asking for here, but I could give you this. And then the other person comes back and says, well, I don't know. Yeah, it's, I don't feel good about that, but I could probably live with it. Especially if you're willing to bend a little bit on this. And this is the kind of discourse that our founders envisioned. In an ideal situation, everybody would be completely free of prejudice of each other, and nobody would want to be all powerful. Nobody would want to be the king of America. I mean, this is what they were getting rid of. They were getting rid of the king. So this system is designed to not have kings, right? The only person who doesn't have to compromise is a king, right? Or a dictator. And our system's designed not to have those. So here's, you know, when we used to live close to each other and we'd see each other every day and, you know, we learned that so-and-so was actually a really good person even though, you know, they're a Methodist and we're a Presbyterian or, you get what I'm saying? It's like you get to know somebody outside of their politics and you get to appreciate them. You go, you know, have a few beers with them. You play you go golfing or bowling or go out to dinner or whatever, or you see them at the supermarket. You know, these are the people that you live with that are your neighbors. And we're all basically good people. And so you get to experience that. And then you'd go to the city council meeting and you'd all argue intensely about things, but then you'd still be friends after it was all over. We don't have that anymore, especially like with gerrymandered districts. Do you ever see these things? Can you imagine that people at one end of the snake actually ever see the people at the other end of the snake? Well, these are strangers. They don't know, you know. So let me get down to the actual nitty-gritty of the idea, okay? So the idea is this. It's like having a pen pal. And the pen pal is somebody, I mean, obviously these are all variables that can be tweaked if we need to, okay? The pen pal is the same gender, the same age, comes from the same kind of family, maybe is even in your profession or does the same kind of job. If you drive a truck, they drive a truck. If you're a medical professional, they're a medical professional. In other words, and they come from, they have, you know, a family, they have two children that are both in high school now, and that's where your kids are too. Just the idea is to try to find people who have a lot in common with each other, except their politics. That's the trick. It's not a trick. I mean, that's the magic of this, I hope, is that you find people who have similar circumstances in life, but have reached very different conclusions about it for whatever reason. And the thing is, you're going to go back and forth with this person basically over email or something that works much like email. And the software is going to help you by sort of coming up with an array of issues and give you a chance to say, okay, are you pro-life or pro-choice? That's something that seems to be a Boolean, right? Either you're pro-life or you're pro-choice. I don't know too many people who... I don't think there is a fence that you can sit on in this one. And, okay, so what we hope is that person A, who lives in Boise, Idaho, we hope that person is pro-life, right? We expect that person to be pro-life. And the person that we pick from, I don't know, Cambridge, Massachusetts... we expect that person to be pro-choice. But both these people teach elementary school and have two kids in grade school and are single parents and female, and they have different... So now the question is, how did you get there? How did you get to where you are? And the people that you pick have to be absolutely... really great people, okay? That's the important thing. You have to know that and accept that up front, that these are people who are, and this is an especially good time to ask people to step up and participate in something like this. Because I imagine that there are an awful lot of people who voted for Trump. Yes, and that's, by the way, one of the other switches. One of them voted for Trump, the other one voted for Hillary Clinton. Okay? I don't want to pair Clinton voters up with Clinton voters up and with Clinton... sorry. You understand. I don't want to pair Trump voters with other Trump voters. That's no good. They came to the same conclusion. I want people who came to opposite conclusions. But I got to believe, and as a person who voted for Hillary now, well, I don't have any regrets about voting for Hillary. But I find myself asking me, what if we had a different candidate? How did we arrive at Hillary? What was the process that led us there? You know, I don't know why I go there, but I do. And so I'm not completely gung-ho on the choice of Hillary. In fact, I'd have to say, I admire Hillary Clinton, and I mean, I'd love to work with her on a project. I, you know, all these kinds of things. I really do think she's a very, very high quality person. I think she would have been a fantastic president, absolutely fantastic. And, you know, people didn't trust her. Are you kidding? Compared to what we're looking at right now, I would totally trust her. Because I know that when the time comes and she, her terms, you know, she served two terms or she is voted out of office, I mean, there's no question she leaves peacefully. She doesn't try to, you know, have a military coup. I mean, people don't know necessarily, people, Americans don't necessarily understand how precious this is, the fact that we don't fight wars every time we change governments here. Well, we don't know what we got here. So I would think that while I have regrets about Hillary as a choice for president, I have to believe that there are some Trump people out there, people who voted for Trump, who are now having some regrets too. I think that, I don't really know, I'd love to test this theory somehow, but I think there must be a fair amount of people who voted for Trump thinking he wasn't going to win. And in a way, a vote for Trump was a protest vote. Why would they think that? Because Trump himself didn't think he was going to win. We know that pretty well. And certainly, if you turned on Fox News, they told you. Even Fox News said that Hillary was going to win. I watched them. I listened. That's what they said. This is where I got my confidence. I said, look, even Fox News says. So maybe you did that. And I think a bunch of Hillary voters stayed home because of that. You know, this all this horse race shit. You know, it could have made the choice for us. We would probably have been better off if we didn't have any idea about who was ahead or not, because they were wrong, or however, whatever happened. Well, so there would be an interesting place to start. Is, you know, help me find. Now I live in a very, very blue place in New York City. I would find it very easy to find a thoughtful, intelligent, questioning, introspective, smart, fair-minded Hillary voter that lives in New York City. I could find you one. Can somebody who lives in Kansas or South Dakota or Texas find me a Trump voter who matches the same qualifications and is anxious to help find out how we come out of this? Because, and I'd love to get like 10 sets of pen pals doing this, and maybe not even guide them at all at first. Just say, here's an introduction. You guys figure this shit out. It's kind of like being on a jury. And maybe we can help you by giving you a list of some issues to talk about. You know, a questionnaire that you fill out. And you actually put the time into it. Because what the whole idea of this learning experiment is that coming out of this, we know what to do next. And then coming out of that, we know what to do after that. That this is an iterative process to try to discover a new kind of online system that isn't a community, that isn't a broadcast environment, isn't a publishing environment. What it is a compromise environment. The whole idea of this is to churn it, and out the other end comes compromise. In other words, out the other end comes pairs of people who've worked it out. You know? So, you're pro-life. Okay. But maybe you can live with other people having abortions. Maybe you can accept that other people see this differently. That would be like the total win for the pro-choice people, right? I mean, and then the pro-choice people, so we know the pro-life people have done a huge amount of compromising. We know that because in their best case, their best world, there would be no abortion. Well, there is abortion, and it's legal. And on the other hand, we also know that if a pro-choice person, of which I raise my hand, I am a pro-choice person, so I can speak to some extent for what a pro-choice person would would want in an ideal circumstances would be absolutely no limits on abortion, and it should be provided for free. And I understand, believe me, I want us to say this, I totally get that we don't know when life begins. That's what I say. We don't know. And that is, it's a tough choice. But on the other hand, we have too many people on this planet. This is, okay, well, see, there's another, I just came up with another one. I was just about to go into climate change, but I know we have differing opinions on that one. I'm not going to change your mind, but I would just like to know how you arrived at your belief that climate change is not whatever. I mean, that also needs to be filled in too. What do you think climate change is? Nothing or something that's, I don't want to go there. That's up to you. If you're not a proponent of doing something about climate change. But in return for that, I would like you to listen to what I have to say about that, how I arrived at my belief that climate change is something that we need to work on. We do need to change the way we work. Now, that's not to say that there wouldn't be issues on which we are in complete agreement on, where no negotiation, no compromise is necessary. There might be. And wouldn't that be something? You know, if we could actually come out of this where there's one issue on which we both get everything that we want. Wouldn't that be something? So, this is potentially a silver lining, because in a year ago, if I had proposed such a system, I wouldn't have proposed such a system because I would know it would have no chance of ever getting off the ground, because people wanted, at that time, wanted to argue with other people, or maybe you were tired of arguing and you were implementing the disconnect, so you wouldn't see any people who are on the other side. This is the division, right? And so it wouldn't have gone anywhere. But today, a lot of us are scared or concerned or freaked out or whatever. And maybe putting an hour a day into working on something, on a project with someone else that could help possibly solve a very big problem that we have, maybe that's something some people, reasonable people, are willing to make an investment for our future. So I don't know how well I've described the idea, but that's pretty much what I have to say about it. So I'm just going to stop right there, and I'd love to hear what comes back. Okay, thanks very much. Bye-bye.